numbers told the story they always do.
He's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Tuesday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, all proudly brought to you by BetMGM. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin, producer number nine, so much more than a producer. Kelly, what's happening?
Not much. Goblin mode, your Oxford 2022 word of the year.
Two words, by the way.
We're learning all the slang in here this morning.
What is goblin mode? What does that mean?
Oh, boy. Unapologetically, self-indulgent, lazy, slovenly, or greedy.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So we're doing this. Are we doing this show in goblin mode today?
Whatever. Yeah, sure. Just lean back. Take it easy.
By the way, Spain and Morocco starting the final two games of the round of 16 in the World Cup 2022 from Qatar. Morocco and Spain, otherwise known as the Sephardic Jewish Bowl, happening right now for those of us who are into that. I've got the draw every which way today. Yeah, this one, the next one, all the way. First halves, full games.
I might hop in live. I couldn't decide whether to do that or take a piece of Morocco, maybe like draw no bet.
Take a piece of Morocco.
Really swing for the fences, you know.
All right, so we got a lot to get into here. On the show, Matt Cox on college basketball. We'll get you some college basketball plays for a Tuesday. Pepperdine's playing, baby. We've got to talk to him about that.
Pepperdine question coming up.
Paul Carr World Cup, his thoughts on game two. Later on today between Switzerland and Portugal. That should be a banger. Figured I'd say that. Pete Futak, college football. Oh, can't wait to talk to Pete about bowl season and see how he feels about the fact that TCU ended up number three. Best I had that one right over old Peter all these weeks. JVT on the NBA, and we must talk about this football game last night, which, Kelly, I had to watch back. Like, when the game happened, I was so shell-shocked by the Tom Brady Tampa Bay Buccaneers comeback late in the fourth quarter, as so many of us were, that I actually went back and watched it just to process what happened. 17-16, the Buccaneers beat the Saints in a game that they were listless in for 3.5 quarters and were down 16-3 and really solidify their playoff run now because they are 6-6. And they have a huge lead now in the NFC South. We were already going through, I'm sure many people were, assuming that they were going to lose this game. They would have led this division at 5-7 with a half-game lead over both the Falcons and the Saints, and it would have been just an absolute, you know, amazing discussion as to how many wins will the winner of this division have, and the consensus was, oh, it'll probably be 7-10. Instead, the Bucs come back and win it. Tom Brady, 36 of 54 for 281, two touchdowns and one pick. But let's just get into the final sequence of this game. So it's 16-3. The last two New Orleans Saints drives that both ended up in field goals combined 24 plays, 134 yards, 14 minutes and 11 seconds off the clock. Those two drives combined. The Bucs, meanwhile, get the ball back with 8:02 left, and it's a three and out. So there's just over 7 minutes left on the clock. And Tom Brady waves off the punt team. And then Todd Bowles, because there was an injury to Cam Hayward. And so Todd Bowles waves him off. He's like, no, buddy, we're punting. And everyone starts to go crazy on Todd Bowles. Mm-hmm. How could you punt here? You're terrible at this. You don't know what you're doing. And at that point, the Bucs had gone 15 drives, their last 15 drives, and had amassed exactly 3 points in the sport of football.
I don't know how you feel. I wasn't going nuts about it like some people were, but I totally thought they should have gone for it.
I don't know that I did, but I was like, oh, well, that's a choice. For sure, that's a choice. And he's going to get reamed for it if this doesn't work out. So the Bucs punt it. New Orleans gets the ball. And on the second down play of this drive, now we're under 7 minutes, Mark Ingram goes out a yard. He catches a pass, and he goes out a yard short of the sticks for no apparent reason. Now, we saw he was a little shaken up on the sidelines, so maybe he was just in that mode of, I don't care what's happening, I'm hurt, I'm walking out of here.
Yeah.
And so it ends up a 3rd-and-1, and what do the Saints do on 3rd-and-1? They call a pass play, which, again, if it's incomplete, the Bucs aren't forced to use a timeout, and that's exactly what it was, incomplete. And so it's a 3-and-out after the Ingram, I'm just going to lollygag out of bounds, a yard short of the sticks, and then this curious call to throw for the first down on 3rd-and-1. And so the Bucs get the ball back with 5:21 left. And you're like, oh, all right, still deep in their own territory. They're at their own 9-yard line. They got to score 2 touchdowns.
They haven't moved the ball all night.
Yeah, I mean, that's not going to come back to haunt the Saints or anything until it did. So first play of that drive at the 9-yard line, Brady almost throws a pick. In fact, at live, yes. Joe Buck is like, oh, they're really going to pick. No, but we saw it bounced. Well, it ends up being a 10-play, 91-yard drive that only takes 2 minutes and 21 seconds off the clock. It's the longest drive, 91 yards, for the Buccaneers this season, aided by a 44-yard pass interference call, a correct one, by the way, on Paulson Adebo on Mike Evans on a 2nd and 20 from the New Orleans 45. What was he doing? He was just like, he was just sitting on the route. He's like, no, you can go behind me.
I mean, that's another play, big play of the game.
Every little, no attention to detail on any of this stuff. If you string together like 5 plays where you're not being attentive to detail, you're going to lose. Brady to Kate Orton, 1-yard touchdown pass. Kate Otten, pardon me. 1-yard touchdown pass, 16-10. All right, still, New Orleans has the ball, but Tampa Bay does have all 3 of their timeouts left. 3rd and 17 after a sack. Dalton to Taysom Hill. Looks like it's going to end it because it's well past the sticks. But broken up, Keanu Neal ruled a legal hit. Did you for a second wonder if that was going to be a helmet-to-helmet? He just grazed
that
helmets.
It didn't jump out to me, no.
I thought for a second, but whoever John Perry, I believe, is their officiating consultant, was like, nope, legal hit.
I feel like I've been that guy for the past few weeks where I'm like, whoa, what about that hit that we didn't look at again? But yeah, I mean, that was a heck of a football play all around, right? Like, it was great pass. Looked like he was going to catch it. Big hit. Knocks the ball loose.
So it's a 3-and-out that took 31 seconds. And now Brady gets the ball back with 1 timeout left. They had to use 2 on that, but not on that incompletion they didn't.
It wasn't until this point, Gil.
Yes.
Where I was like, okay. Oh. We got a game. Like, the Bucs are alive now.
I think the whole world even went to, oh, this is totally happening again.
Yeah, right. Yes.
2:29 left. They have 1 timeout left. They start at their own 37. It gets to 19 seconds, 1st and goal at the 5, after Scotty Miller makes a 3rd down catch, and then Julio Jones makes one hell of a catch at the 5-yard line on a 15-yard completion. So it's 19 seconds left, 1st and goal at the 5. Everyone's in a frenzy. They still have their timeout. Brady to Godwin, touchdown, but a hold called, and a correct one. 1st and goal at the 15 now with 16 seconds left, incomplete pass. Were you thinking this might not happen? 2nd and goal at the 15, 12 seconds left, Godwin for 9, and then 3rd and goal at the 6 with 8 seconds left, a dump off to Rashad White, touchdown Tampa. See you later, everybody. 17-16 after the pitchy woo-woo fails. That is it. It happened again. Brady's 4th quarter, 15 of 21 for 125 and 2 touchdowns. The Bucs outscored the Saints 14-0 in the final 3 minutes. 2 go-ahead touchdown passes now for Brady in the final 15 seconds of regulation this season. Remember the Rams game back in Week 9. It's his 44th comeback in 4th quarter overtime since the merger, setting the record for the most ever, breaking a tie with Peyton Manning. The Bucs had lost their last 69 in a row, trailing by 8-plus in the 4th quarter. And it's Brady's 2nd win now out of his career after trailing by 13-plus points in the 4th quarter. The other one, of course, famously being Super Bowl 51 versus the Falcons, the only Super Bowl where they score in the middle of the game, 28-3. It's more famous than the final score. And it's the latest go-ahead touchdown pass of his 23-year career. And because they win, the Bucs now, instead of being 5-7 with a half-game lead over 2 teams,
it's massive.
Now have a 92% chance to make the postseason, whereas the Panthers have a 4% chance, the Falcons have a 4% chance, and the Saints reduced to a 1% chance.
Oh, man.
Brutal.
If you're a Saints fan, too, I mean, like, you're in control of that division if you win last night, or you're right up there. I mean, that is, I don't know. I know everybody's sitting here saying it, and I got a billion texts, like, last night of course that happened.
Of course, yeah.
Sure. For me at this point in Tom Brady's career, afterward, it's easy to think that. Yes, okay, it felt like that was going to happen. I didn't feel like that in the moment. Like, what the heck has Tampa Bay done this whole year, even though people keep giving them credit?
Terrible.
What have they done the whole year? Crown them, Gil. Crown them.
They're terrible.
Like, what have they done the whole year for me to expect that Brady, is going to one drive lead to, what was it, 92 yards down the field. He's going to do that, score a touchdown.
91.
Then he's going to get the ball and do it again. If you watched any part of that game last night, why am I supposed to believe this offense is going to get anything done?
It clearly reminds us of the Bucs game against the Rams a few weeks back.
Yes.
And I think about this game, this will only be, you know, again, it was a Cowboys-Washington game with Mark Brunell and Santana Moss some years ago where Washington was losing 13-0 for like three-plus quarters. And all of a sudden he hits Santana Moss twice and they win 14-13. Kind of a similar thing. But those were bombs. But just out of nowhere, and that's why I had to watch it back. I'm like, what just happened? I was shell-shocked by it.
I was watching that ending. You know, big takeaway. I ended up back on the under last night.
Like, I did this too, in game.
This Buccaneers team is a dead under team just every time out. It's unbelievable.
I bet the in game first quarter under 35.5. That barely got there in the end. But the two things, one, to your thing about, you know, just taking it for granted, I thought the Bucs players. I thought Brady was the most excited of all the players after the game. The rest of them were like, well, we figured you were going to do it, so.
That is a great point. He was the only one that kind of seemed like jacked up about it.
I mean, you just did it 3 weeks ago, Tom, so no biggie. I thought that was one thing. And the other thing is I think about my Cowboys fan friend Dave Check, who was in town this week. And before this game last night, he goes, here are the only teams I'm afraid of as a Dallas Cowboys fan. Said Philly, San Francisco, even without Jimmy G. He notably did not mention Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And he said, and Tampa Bay with Tom Brady. He said, and I'll tell you why. Dallas is going to have to go in there if Tampa Bay wins the division, and now it's 92% certain they will. And he goes, I don't trust that dude from not stealing one at the end.
Yeah, sure. I mean, we've seen it now, right? I would be scared of this him, too.
And he said that before last night. Whew. Tom Brady's pretty good at this, huh?
He's pretty good.
We'll come back, some news and notes. College basketball plays of the night. With Matt Cox from Three Man Weave. We'll do that on the other side. Numbers Game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
It's time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. BetMGM with all your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds specials, and much more. Download the BetMGM app today and stop by any MGM casino on the Strip with your state-issued ID to open an account. The star places sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin. Yesterday, so much going on. I spent most of my day like following the transfer portal. Like, that's how nerdy it got for me. Almost 1,000 players in college football entered the transfer portal.
Are you serious?
So all of last year was 3,000. It was open for the whole year. Just in one day, almost 1,000. And I called this, if you remember, Thursday or Friday on a numbers game. I said, I don't think people understand how huge the transfer portal is going to be on Monday. And I was focusing on the fact that the one thing we don't talk about a lot is just how much money these guys are making. Because the answer is we don't really know. Mm-hmm. But there's a bunch of quarterbacks out there who it's very very comfortable to say they're making over $1 million a year. We just don't talk about it because we don't know. And so yesterday, and by the way, Bud Elliott from the Cover 3 podcast that we've had on this from 24/7 Sports, he had another great reason as to why there was going to be a bunch of people in the transfer portal in addition to all that money, which was this is the class of 2021, entering class of 2021. So this was their second season. This is the class that COVID prevented schools from truly evaluating correctly. And so a lot of kids were overvalued and a lot of kids got undervalued because they didn't have tape on them. A lot of high schools just didn't play. And so now all of these kids are like, well, we're just going to enter the portal to find our true level now. So it's all like a confluence of events as well, not just the money, but that too.
That's a great point.
Which was, it's a great point by him.
Bud Elliott, if you don't follow me, is one of the better college football guys out there. What is his name? Phil Yurkovich, right? Mm-hmm. That one surprised me a bit because he was up there on the draft odds be one of the first quarterbacks to go, at least a couple months ago.
There's a few. I mean, so last year, again, like what did the transfer portal, let's look back for a second. What did the transfer portal give us? Well, it gave us Caleb Williams to USC. It gave us Bo Nix to Oregon. Gave us Spencer Rattler, who had his moment late in the South Carolina season. Just quarterbacks, let's just talk about Devin Leary from NC State. Spencer Sanders was a surprise from Oklahoma State. He enters the transfer portal. DJ Uiagalelei, of course. from Clemson, Cade McNamara we talked about from Michigan, Hudson Card from Texas.
Keaton Slovis.
Keaton Slovis, who's playing for his 17th college football team.
I mean, like, that's what it feels like at this point.
JT Daniels and Keaton Slovis just going around the country. So, I don't know. I mean, it's free agency, dude. It's just straight up free agency.
I wonder, like, it's got to be such a different college experience, too, for these.
You kidding me?
Just for fans. Yes. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just thinking of my time at Florida State as a student fan, right? Where you're like, you're tracking someone's career basically as they're recruited to a freshman as they grow throughout college. And, like, most of these guys, like, you're tracking them, and it's like, no, we had one bad season. Let me get out of here, go somewhere else.
Oh, and also, they're mercenaries, right? So, like, all these kids that Texas A&M bought, if you listen right to Nick Saban's correct word, they're also like, well, we're not playing here like we want to. We'll just go somewhere else and get paid again.
I mean, Alabama had, what, half a dozen players or something enter yesterday?
A&M and Alabama both with double-digit players. Let's talk some college basketball. Nice segue here. We'll talk to Matt Cox from Three Man Weave, who joins us once again. Always thrilled to have a Three Man Weaver. How you doing, Matty?
Boys, I'm good. How are you?
Doing very well. What do you got back there? Duke, Indiana, Hawaii, and Valley. What is it? Valley State. All right.
The Delta Devils. So I'm trying to span the entire spectrum the haves and the have-nots in college basketball.
I was going to say a couple of those things, not like the other two. Let's talk about more of the blue bloods. And I always, for whatever reason, when we do college basketball this year, I've always brought up Gonzaga first, but I think they're a good little lens through which to look at it. So Gonzaga struggles as 15.5-point favorites against Kent State last night. They end up winning by 7 or 8. Cosmetically, it looks better in the end than it was really for the full game. What's the deal, man? Is it just that the guard play has fallen off? And then there's a general betting question also, which is there doesn't seem to be as many fouls being called in college basketball, right? The unders seem to be hitting at a higher rate than normal. Is there anything to that?
Actually, I was more focused on the uptick in pace the last few days, but efficiency has actually been pretty high the last week, extending back into the last 2 weeks. I think overs have actually been playing pretty well. I need to look at the day-by-day data on that. But yeah, fouling was a big thing. I think we tracked last year and the year before as well. You guys, just the points of emphasis from the referees early in the season typically dictate a lot of the scoring patterns. We saw with the extension of the three-point line, I think that was 3 years ago, be a huge boon for unders. But with all of these macro trends, especially with the total macro trends, I never like to latch on to them because I think the pendulum swings pretty quickly back the other way. The market picks up on it. Odds makers pick up on it. And many times it swings too far, and you actually can have some value counterpunching with a little bit of the left hook. So I have been tracking that loosely, but my totals have not been very good this year in full transparency. So I'm trying to put those on ice until conference play.
What about Gonzaga? Do you worry about them? They're just a lesser version of that squad this year?
Yeah, I do. Talent's a little bit watered down. Defensively, not as dogged on the perimeter. I think they have some issues. And Kent State, by the way, they almost beat Houston in Houston a week ago. That's a real team. So I also want to give them some credit for that effort. That's in no way an indictment on Gonzaga. That team's legit.
Okay, let's get to, first of all, contractually obligated to ask you about Pepperdine in Nevada tonight.
Of course.
Matt, you know how this goes. Pepperdine did get smashed by UCLA. They're 5-2. Bounced back earlier this week, had a great performance. They're 5-2. Nevada's 7-2. This is actually a pretty good barometer for both teams. Yep. Any thought on this game?
I wanted to take your waves at the opener. It's up to -2, though, so I think some big money's coming in on your waves. I think Pepperdine just steps up in class poorly. UCLA is such a good favorite. I don't look at that as like a game that makes me question my Pepperdine rating and just general prognosis of them. I think they're legit. This talent is like, half the power conference teams don't have two legitimate NBA prospects that scouts are looking at. They did get a key interior guy back, or they're supposed to, I think, today in Kolobabe. So roster-wise, talent-wise, Pepperdine's the better team. Nevada's played more like a team to date, but I don't trust them here on the road, even though they're coming from nearby LMU. I think Pepperdine's the right side here. I think I just trust your waves and the talent. It's next level good.
The two talent, the NBA prospects that you're referring to are Maxwell Lewis and Houston Millett. Is that correct?
Correct. And then who's the other? They have
Mike Mitchell.
Their third stud.
Mike Mitchell's Mitchell third.
Mike Mitchell is getting some looks too. He's a little bit undersized, but man, he's been really good as well. And then Malik Moore, the freshman guard, I think is a pretty highly touted kid. So, and then Javon Porter, the cousin of Michael MPJ. Luckily he stayed healthy. One of the only Porters in that entire family to stay healthy today. But yeah, no, it's a deep, deep team, man.
Any thoughts on the two Jimmy V Classic games tonight? Illinois, Texas, where the Longhorns are 2.5-point favorites, and then Iowa and Duke, where the Blue Devils are also 2.5-point favorites.
Yeah, it seems like Illinois and Duke have taken money so far. I did lean Duke at the opener. I'm just not in any rush to bet a John Shire coach team, at least the John Shire coaching I've seen to date, which has been underwhelming, quite frankly, against Fran McCaffrey and that well-oiled machine that Iowa has to offer. So I would stay away from that one, but I'd love Illinois at the opener at +4, but some money's taking it down to 2.5, 3. Illinois, I think it's just built to withstand Texas's perimeter pressure. They have long guards. They're older. They played at two neutral site games already this year there in Vegas, where this is Texas' first time really leaving the friendly confines of the Lone Star State. So some situational angles set up well in Illinois' favor, but just because Texas has played so well, I think I need a few more than 2.5 if I'm looking to take Illinois with any confidence here. So lame overarching theme of stay away from both the current price.
Real quick, because I want to get your picks. John Shire's weakness in your observation is what?
Hasn't made any adjustments to the front line. I think you have to look and watch Derek Lively, who was highly touted, but hasn't been the same guy we thought. It kind of reminds me of the Harry Giles situation. What was that, 5 years back or something? Just never was the same guy coming off the injury. You have to adjust. I think you got to play Filipowski more at the five, bring in some of those guards and wings. Just kind of like his old boss in the latter years of his career.
Not
adaptability.
Yeah.
That's my concern that I've seen so far. Very early, but that's my concern.
Oh, what Duke coach does that remind me of? All right, we got 60 seconds. Let's have a couple or three picks. What do you got?
I'm looking to take Butler at home against Yale, actually against the market here. It's been bet down to 6. I think Butler's a terrific home favorite. They're not that deep. They've been shorthanded all year. But Yale's not exactly a juggernaut. They've played very well. They're in great form right now. But I don't think Yale, similar to the Pepperdine take, steps up in class as well. So I like Butler -6. Other one I did like is Toledo. I've been trying to back my rocket ships after fading them unsuccessfully the last 2 years prior. I just think they're laying 3-4 on the road. It's up to 5 now. I'd probably take first half, but they are playing a young, inexperienced Northern Iowa team that just doesn't have the horses. Coming off the loss to George Mason, I think the Rocket Chips are motivated. They're locked in and the better team. So,
all right. So Butler and Toledo both laying the points in their respective games against Yale and Northern Iowa, respectively. All right. Maddie Cox, everybody. At Maddie with a Y _ Cox and at 3MW _CBB. Thank you, Matt. Appreciate it as always.
Yep, take care, Joe.
Matt Cox, part of the 3-Man Weave Group, including Jim Root and, of course, Kai McKeon as well. We'll come back. World Cup thoughts for today. Still 0-0 between Morocco and Spain. Paul Carr on the way. Numbers Game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Hey, if you missed any part of our show or anything on the VSiN schedule today, don't forget to check out the free sports betting podcast that we have. Catch replays of all our shows or download and listen on your schedule. Go to VSiN.com/podcasts and get all of them, including Coast to Coast Hoops with Greg Hoops Peterson. They'll look at every major and some of the minor college basketball games on the upcoming schedule to find betting opportunities. I'm going to go ahead and say he plays all of them. He'll certainly look at all of them. There's also Beating the Book with me, Gil Alexander. That is a Monday and Thursday guessing lines and Megapod thing. Or Market Insights with Josh Applebaum. Plus, we've got Hardwood Handicappers with JVT, the Lombardi Line, Follow the Money, My Guys in the Desert, and many more. They're all free and available now at VSiN.com/podcast or wherever you get your podcast, wherever they're available. VSiN.com/podcast. So some other notes. Yesterday, the Heisman finalists were finally announced, Kelly, as they were supposed to yesterday. Georgia's Stetson Bennett, USC's Caleb Williams, TCU's Max Duggan, and Ohio State's C.J. Stroud announced as the Heisman Trophy finalists. That will be announced, the winner, that is, this Saturday. Caleb Williams, a prohibitive favorite. You believe it will be Caleb Williams of USC?
I got no idea, man.
Caleb Williams' stats are well above everybody else's.
I would think it's still him.
For those of us who have a 100-to-1 ticket on Max Duggan and believe him getting his team with that final Heisman drive, despite the fact that they refused to sneak it in overtime, getting them into the postseason, or the playoff, if you will, well, some of us hope. But I would imagine it's Caleb Williams is to lose. But, man, would that be a day.
They don't even have odds up anymore, huh? Ballots would do, I'm guessing.
So here's the first reason why it's probably in Caleb Williams' favor. The ballots were distributed before the championship games. And so a lot of these Heisman voters probably put them in before the championship game.
Yeah, we've talked about Heisman things in the past. Yeah, that is absolutely a thing.
So objectively, just taking my ticket out of it, objectively, that's why Caleb Williams is going to be in the driver's seat also, top of the fact that his stats are the best. So it's like, and then it's probably people putting them in, a bunch of people putting them in too early, or earlier than they probably should as responsible, if they're responsible Heisman voters. Those are the finalists, so we'll see what happens on Saturday. I have no expectations, but boy, would that be a nice addition to an already full trophy case this year of betting winners.
Yeah, you made that bet semi-late, too.
Yeah.
100-1 in what week? What was it, week six, week seven?
It was mid-season.
I'll
tell you which game it was. I'll look back at the date, but it was in the middle of a game where I'm like, wait, he's 100-1 right out. I'm going. And then the NFL announcing some major changes to week 15 of their 2022 schedule yesterday. Giants and Commanders flexed into Sunday night. And then Saturday, December 17th, the day before, a tripleheader that will feature the Colts at the Vikings, the Ravens at the Browns, and most notably, the Dolphins at the Bills. Are those all NFL Network games, I believe? I believe they are.
They usually are. Right?
I believe they are. Tripleheader. That's next week, not this week, coming up in the National Football League. Let's talk some World Cup. Let's bring him in, ladies and gentlemen, from, of course, True Media Networks and the Expected Value Podcast. It's our buddy Paul Carr on the road. How you doing, man?
Good morning, Gil. Yeah, I'm out in San Diego for MLB Winter Meetings. Still trying to see some World Cup and keep up with that, too.
What do you hope to accomplish at the MLB Winter Meeting? Share that with us.
Yeah, True Media has 22 MLB teams as clients, so a lot of it is just catch up. You know, we haven't been at winter meetings because they haven't been quite the same the last few years, so it's been a few years. So part of it's just catching up, showing off new stuff on our analytics site, and then, you know, also meet with some of the teams we don't have and other vendors we might partner with. So it's just it's easy to see all the teams in 3 days. So, you know, we probably have like 40 meetings scheduled over 3 days.
Okay.
Easy to do that rather than set them all up on Zoom or whatever.
I want to see how much I can extract out of you. So 22 of the 30 teams are on board with your analytics. You are involved with 22 of the teams, which means that 8 are not.
Mm-hmm.
Of those 8, how many would you handicap as having zero interest in analytics whatsoever, or at least zero in yours?
I don't think there's any of them that have no interest. Usually it's more they'd just rather do it internally. You know, there are some teams, without saying names, that have a lot of money and prefer to do it their own way. And
yeah,
if you know what I mean. And
yeah,
there's something to that. You know, you get a little more control over your systems. There's advantages to us, of course. You know, we've been doing it for 10 plus years. So if you're well behind, we can catch you up in a hurry, things like that. So yeah, usually it's just we'd rather kind of control it and do it how we're doing it. And some teams prefer to do it that way.
Is one of them pronounced Doyers? And you can blink twice if one of them is pronounced Doyers. No, right.
Actually.
No. Oh, they're in. Oh, how about that? Okay. By the way, big news in baseball yesterday, just since we're talking about it. Trey Turner goes to the Phillies for 11 years, $300 million, which is a bigger contract on a year-to-year basis than Bryce Harper's was on an average cost or average contract base. And then Mets and free agent right-hander Justin Verlander before that, they come up with a two-year, $86.66 million deal, which me and my buddies were trying to figure out. If he got a normal working stiff's bi-weekly paycheck, what would that look like for him at $43 million a year? And the answer we came up with doing some math and taxes was about $1 million every 2 weeks. Maybe a little shy of that. Think he can survive off that?
He can get by.
No. All right, let's talk about the World Cup. Right now it is Morocco and Spain. We're in the 36th minute. It's 0-0. I went first half draw, full-time draw in both of these games today. What did you have in this one? I know it's already started, but what did you have here?
I had both teams to score at plus 120, I think it was. There have been a couple of decent chances here. I just think it kind of plays into Morocco's hands in the sense that Spain likes to possess the ball, and Morocco will just counterattack. That's what they want to do. They've got a lot of good speed on the wings and such. So I think this may open up a little bit at some point. But, yeah, I don't mind. I think it's just over half the game so far at the World Cup have been draws at halftime.
Yeah.
So you could almost blindly play that.
You know, that's
last few games, and it's not the worst strategy.
I have brain-deaded those for a full tournament at this point. The first two legs of the group stage was awesome. After that, it sort of tapered down a little bit. So far, really, just the Blue Bloods have advanced, right, with the exception of maybe Croatia. They won in penalty kicks yesterday. But, man, Brazil really looked justified in there being the short shot yesterday, didn't they? Crushing South Korea.
Yeah, the only reason they're not even a shorter shot is because they'll likely get Argentina in the semifinal, which would be just an unbelievable game. I mean, it may be the best rivalry in international soccer. And, man, that would be as fierce as it gets. They'll have a stadium that I presume will be rocking. Most of the Brazil games have been pretty packed over there. So that could be an all-timer type of game.
What do you have in the second game, which is the final round of 16 game between Portugal and Switzerland?
Yeah, don't confuse those two.
Don't do that.
Yeah, I have – this is kind of the old throw up in your mouth a little bit play, but I have over 2.5 goals at plus 125. Switzerland and Portugal, both of them kind of came in with a little more of a defensive or conservative reputation, at least offensively. But all their games have been fairly open, with the exception of Switzerland against Brazil, when they just kind of got Brazil, then it was a 1-0 win for Brazil. But Switzerland has a tendency to kind of go for it in these big games. You saw it against Serbia, it ended up 3-2. They played France in the first knockout round of the Euros last year, it ended up 3-3. They went toe-to-toe with Spain and went to penalties on 1-1, but Spain had a ton of opportunities to put that one away in the quarterfinals last year. And Portugal's been more offensive. This is not quite the Euro 2016 winners where they were just going to grind out a 1-0 win. They've got a lot more attacking talent that their head coach, Fernando Santos, has been willing to unleash a little bit more. So I think there's going to be goals. It's always hard a little bit to take that play in a knockout stage because, you know, it could be 0-0 in the 80th minute or even in the 20th minute. And you feel like nothing's going to happen the whole game. But I think there's a pretty good shot. So getting plus money, I played over 2.5 at plus 125.
Over 2.5. That starts 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. Once again, the final of the round of 16 matches today. So let me just put it this way then. Obviously, I was mentioning, so really the usual suspects are getting through the quarters. The quarters are going to be awesome.
Yeah.
How many sides do you feel legitimately could win this? Because the conventional wisdom, it seems to be that there's more than ever. Are you on board with that?
Yeah, I mean, let's assume, we'll just say Spain and Portugal get through for simplicity. So you have the favorites. Wouldn't stun me if any of those eight won it. I mean,
even
Brazil's
Croatia,
the favorite.
Even Croatia.
You know, they got to the semi, or they were runner up 4 years ago. They would definitely be the longest shot, I think, mostly because they would have to beat Brazil and probably Argentina. So that would be the biggest surprise, not so much because of their talent, but just because of the route. You know, they could have to run the gamut of Brazil, Argentina, France or something to win the trophy, which would just be an unbelievable run. I think all eight teams, almost regardless of who's left, would have a shot. I mean, Morocco and Switzerland would obviously be a little less so. But, you know, you get this far, you knock out a couple big teams, and, yeah, anyone's going to have a chance. It's just going to be that route is going to be really hard for the bottom of those eight teams.
All right. And then the last question is, and as I drive out of here, sometimes I put on local radio and someone was talking about, he believes, and this was his like well ahead of time prediction, but he believes that the United States 4 years from now will enter the World Cup as being a side for the first time, that anything besides winning it all would be a disappointment. He believes that's where this golden generation will be in 4 years. Is that an exaggeration or do you subscribe to that?
I'd say it's an exaggeration, just given they haven't made a huge run yet. You know, we're not totally sure what the format's going to look like, but there's probably going to be a round of 32. So I would say, you know, if the U.S. won a couple knockout games and got to the quarters, that would be a pretty massive success in 4 years.
Okay. He was getting me excited, but, you know, 4 years away. Thank you, Paul. Appreciate it as always, man.
All right, have a good one.
Paul Carr, everybody, at Paul Carr, C-A-R-R, on Twitter. We'll come back. Oh, someone wants to guess some college football lines, and his name is Kelly Bidlin. Next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Basketball fans can turn a loss into a win with the king of sportsbooks. Just place a single first basket score prop bet on any NBA game, and if your bet loses, you'll receive up to $25 back in free bets. Wager confidently and take your game to the next level with BetMGM, an authorized gaming partner of the NBA. Just log into your account or download the BetMGM app and sign up today. Then wager on any player to score the first basket in any NBA game, and if your bet misses, you'll get up to $25 back in free bets. Turn game time into showtime with BetMGM. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. 21 years of age or older, wager new and existing customer offer. All promotions subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable free bets or site credit. Free bets expire 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Promotional offer not available in Mississippi, Nevada, or New York. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin. A numbers game right here at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Cowboys designating left tackle Tyron Smith to return from IR. He had that hamstring injury, so the Cowboys getting some help on their O-line. Bengals head coach Zach Taylor saying that Joe Mixon has a chance to clear concussion protocol early in the week. Remember Samaje Perine with 106 yards rushing this past week for the Bengals as his replacement. So that's good injury news for both of those clubs.
He's had a couple big weeks in a row now, Perine.
Yeah.
I mean, that's scary news for any opponents of the Cowboys and Bengals out there, right? I mean, two teams that are playing well right now that are about to get big-time impact players back.
This is from Tim Kawakami, who writes, for those of us who lived in the Bay Area, writes for many years for both on all Bay Area teams, all sports, but Tim Kawakami on Trey Lance. What if Purdy gets dinged up and the Niners need another quarterback for the divisional round? That's a very different situation, and I think that window isn't fully closed. Thank you, J-Rod, for passing
about
that along.
About Trey Lance?
That's about Trey Lance. Then there was some news yesterday.
That was the first thing I thought of when Garoppolo went down. I'm like, what's Trey Lance's status again?
Yeah, then Kyle Shanahan had a weird little comment about Jimmy G, where, you know, they were like, oh, he's out for the year. And then Kyle Shanahan was like, well, we'll get one more definitive word tomorrow. We're not 100%. Like, I don't know if he said 100% sure, but he left a little crack in the door about Jimmy G as well. So I don't know.
Yeah, then we got Baker Mayfield on waivers today. Like, it's a fantasy league, and so whoever's going to jump in on him.
I think my instinct on Baker Mayfield, though, was correct, because that he would not end up with the Niners. Because I think the Niners are super happy with what they have, Brock Purdy and then Josh Johnson now. Josh Johnson playing for his 175th NFL team.
Yeah, roughly.
He's been with
a professional football franchise because he's also done the XFL, right. AAF, I don't even know what else.
That's right. He's been with the Niners before, too. But Kyle Shanahan with the curious quote of, I would be surprised if Baker Mayfield was here. Like, he would have, like, distancing himself from the decision-making entirely.
Right.
Then the other one that was interesting was Robert Saleh and the Jets. He will not say, is that a correct English sentence?
Sure.
He keeps saying that the intent is for Zach Wilson to play again.
Oh, yeah, like weekly he's naming a starting quarterback. Yeah.
Yeah. And, okay, you can say that. Yeah, things happen in this league week to week. Sure, they do. But he really just refuses to commit to Mike White, at least publicly. And I don't know what do you think's behind that?
It's tough. I mean, I actually think it's pretty simple for the Jets. If you continue on a playoff push, Mike White is your quarterback.
Of course, right? Shouldn't be a question.
He's your quarterback no matter what. I don't care what's going on, right? Because the front office isn't going to be pushing you to play Zach Wilson if you're really on a playoff push right now, right? But you start losing a couple games. Yeah, I think it's pretty simple. Mike White, you're back to the bench. We got to see what we got in our number two overall pick.
Just doing it to keep the kids' spirits up, maybe.
Yeah. I don't.
Boy. Could you imagine if he made an arbitrary decision to just go back to Zach? Well, yeah, we'll go back to the kid.
I mean, look, Mike White has been great.
Yeah.
We love Mike White. It's a great story, okay? There's still a reason why the guy was number three on the depth chart at one point. I feel like we all get... We all go crazy when some of these backup quarterbacks go in there and play a couple games well, and it's, okay, he can be a serviceable backup. There's a reason why he's sitting on the bench.
Someone was tweeting us yesterday, a whole bunch of other podcasts are now calling him Michael White. Listen to the show.
Really? That story's fantastic.
We appreciate it.
Michael White.
As many people want to use that as possible.
I'm sitting there yelling at my TV outside, Michael White, stop it!
Vikings won that game 4 times on Sunday against the Jets. Ladies and gentlemen, we looked for a very clever name to this segment. We landed on Guessing College Football Lines with Kelly Bidlin.
Let's go! Bowl edition, baby!
The bowl edition.
The last one, you.
We're going to do more than one bowl edition?
I don't know.
We have plenty of time.
I just said the last one. I don't know. Maybe there's more. What a cliffhanger for the fans out there.
I noticed we skipped the Army-Navy game. We want to know part of that? Too much of a guess?
Yeah, I guess we did skip that one. It is over under 37.5. That's my guess. But I guess the total.
All right. For those who are just landing on this and you're like, wait a minute. We just had to hear you guess NFL lines for 2 hours yesterday. What's with this? Well, this stemmed from, and I want to get the game right. I won't remember the name of the game, which it was.
I don't remember. It was Washington, right?
Washington was involved.
Stanford-Washington.
Washington-Stanford, yes. And just off-air real quick, because Dr. Bob was about to come on, and for graphics, Kelly wanted to know, what game does Dr. Bob want to talk about? And I was texting with Bob, and Bob's like, Washington-Stanford. And Kelly's like, what's the spread? And I said, 14. And Kelly goes, okay. And there's a pregnant pause, and Kelly goes, plus or minus. So that gave birth to this wonderful segment that Kelly Bidley knows all kinds of sports. College football, not so much.
I appreciate it. That's exactly how it happened. Yeah. Want to make sure we had it right?
Yeah. All right.
I don't know if Stanford's good 1 year or not. David Shaw gone now.
David Shaw, David Shaw finally stepping down, which just felt like, we didn't really talk about this a lot, but just felt like he was like, yeah, I realized that I've sucked for many years and I've been stealing money, so let me get ahead of this.
The other one is there seems to be this massive consensus that he will end up on TV. So I don't even know if there's a next college coaching job out there for him, but it sounds like everybody expects he's going to be on TV at some point.
Is he that dynamic of a guy?
I don't know, I guess.
All right, Kelly. Famous Idaho Potato Bowl. Eastern Michigan and San Jose State Spartans.
Oh, yeah. No Wyatt here today, but we still work in a Mountain West Conference school. No problem there. Directional Michigan school. 3 straight wins to end the year. We got a 2-2 finish for San Jose State. The bowl games were really tough, Gil, because, you know, you don't have really common opponents really to compare stuff to. However, both these teams did play Western Michigan, both beat Western Michigan, so I was able to learn a little from that, maybe. I don't know. It looks like this should be a pretty tight game to me. I made Eastern Michigan a 2.5-point favorite for this game. The famous Idaho Potato Bowl. Don't know how many other famous states have famous potatoes out there, but Idaho, you got them. And 2.5. 2.5 is what I'm going with. Eastern Michigan.
Yeah, that's not correct.
No, it's not right.
Spartans by 3.5. San Jose State, baby, by 3.5.
Well, value on Eastern Michigan.
Wrong team favorite, according to Kelly Billen. Yeah, all right, what's next?
Wrong team favorite.
What do we got? Liberty and Toledo. The Boca Raton Bowl. Oh, that's right in your backyard.
Boca Raton Bowl, Gil. I was there for year one of the Boca Raton Bowl. Covered it for several years before coming out here to Vegas. This is my bowl game, baby. Toledo has played in this game multiple times. Real key here, are you staying at the Boca Resort or PGA National? Big difference, Gil. You want to be on the beach for this game, nice and rested, nice and fancy Boca, not up in Palm Beach Gardens, about 30 minutes away from the stadium. Big advantage to whichever team stayed at the Boca Resort. I'm going to go with Toledo here, laying 6 points in this game versus Liberty. Toledo, the MAC champs, I believe. Experience in this game before. Liberty lost final 3 straight games, including New Mexico State. You can't be that good if you're losing to New Mexico State. I got Toledo favored by 6 in the roofclaim.com Boca Raton Bowl.
The Del Boca Vista Bowl. Toledo minus 6. No, it's Toledo minus 3.5.
That wasn't that bad.
I'm terrible. Well, let's move on. We got to race through these, Kelly. Your analysis is so deep.
Got to race, yep.
Oklahoma and your alma mater, Florida State.
Oh, yeah. Noel straight rolling right now. They're laying a late 13 in this game. End to an ugly season for Oklahoma. I don't even know why they're in a bowl game. Do they even want to be here? That's a big question. This is the Cheez-It Bowl, Gil.
Cheez-It
Bowl. I think they have multiple bowl games this year. Don't really know how that works. That's where we're chilling out for the game. That's where I'm chilling out. I think we got another graphic in there where it shows where you and Isaiah are hanging out. That's right outside my cool Cheez-It Bowl room. I have Florida State minus 13 in this. This game will be in Orlando. Don't expect a massive home field advantage for Florida State. There will be fans there. It ain't going to be that big, though. Don't get consumed by that angle when you're breaking down this game.
It's Florida State by 8, not by 13, sir.
Okay.
You overrated your alma mater. But you know what? Jordan Travis and Kerr, I think they're going to roll.
Me too.
I think they're going to roll. Let's do one more. What do we got? Oh, we got Maryland and Talia Tagovailoa against NC State.
That's right. The Duke's Mayo Bowl. We all remember this one, baby. Time to chug some mayo down for the Duke's Mayo Bowl.
Disgusting.
NC State laying 3 in this game. Show me the mayo.
Don't show this.
There we go. Show me the mayo. Look at this guy getting
so
after it.
Gross.
NC State laying 3. NC State with a win over FSU, so they got to be the favorite in this game. I got them laying 3 in this year's bowl game.
No, it's Maryland minus 1.5.
Wrong favorite.
Yeah, well, we have transfer portal issues here for NC State. Okay. Well, we've run out of time, Kelly. There was going to be another one. Are you disappointed?
Alabama by a million. It's okay.
Yeah, but they're not going to have a lot of players, man. I don't know about that.
Yeah, everybody's transferring, right?
It's only Alabama by minus four right now.
I put six. I was close.
Oh, not by a mile then. Okay. All right, not by a million or whatever. Nice job, Kelly, as always. Hope you extracted some value from that exercise. We'll come back. We'll talk about NFL awards next.